You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science and Sport. Today we are in Nijmegen.
Cozze citele, cozze, cozze piscine, nu spicudeci cora, nu spicudeci cora.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Nijmegen, in a square outside a bar, enjoying a Dutch beer.
We are. I'm Richard Moore. That was Lionel Burney. Hello, Lionel.
Hello, Richard.
And with Daniel Freeb as well.
Hello.
Happy birthday, Richard. I notice you're wearing your birthday gift from the cycling podcast, your captain's armband.
Well, at the end of yesterday's episode, we wondered where Simon Gill had gone, didn't we, their photographer? He disappeared, and he doesn't normally disappear. And I discovered this morning that he'd actually been mooching around Decathlon.
Well, this all stemmed from my obsession with Decathlons, didn't it? Cultivated over many years of covering the Tour de France, even dating to before that, when I used to go on holiday to France as a kid, and I'm kind of obsessed with Decathlon, aren't I? And all the incredible array of sporting equipment that one can buy at Decathlon. He came back with red and yellow cars, captain's armband. We hoped he would come back with a javelin or a crossbow.
But we got a referee whistle instead.
I'll use that at some point. I've got the red and yellow cards, going to use them as well. I'm going to wear my captain's armband every time we're on air podcasting. just so that you guys know who's
age
in charge.
Richard today?
Yeah. I'm an age today.
Are you older than Jean-Christophe Parot, who I think I discovered today is going to be the oldest ever, or is the oldest ever, Giro d'Italia debutant? He's going to be 39 when the race finishes.
Yeah, I'm a little older than him. I'm about the same age as Jens Vogt.
The big question is, though, Rich, when you leave the race, who are you going to give the captain's armband to?
Well, I'll toss it to the ground as I stomp off the pitch, and it'll be up to one of you guys to pick it up.
As the birthday boy, are you also de facto pedaleur de charme? We didn't do pedaleur de charme. We're going to do it tomorrow, aren't we?
No, we said we'd start it in Italy. Maybe we should start it tomorrow. We could do.
Anyway.
Hang on. Whoa. Before we finish with the birthday stuff, what about a little rendition, guys?
Come on.
At the end, maybe we can...
In Italian?
Can you... Okay, all right.
Tanti auguri a te. No, that's enough.
Maybe we can play us out at the end of the episode. We always need to give people something to carry on listening for. I think that'll be sufficient. If you guys could play out this episode with a rendition of Happy Birthday, that'd be great.
I think, aren't there really quite controversial rights issues over the use of Happy Birthday?
We're using the Jaws theme. I don't think we should be worrying about Happy
Birthday. Anyway, chaps, let's crack on.
Speaking of the Jaws theme, that's what people are going to be tuning in for. The next installment of A Shark's Tale, coming later in this episode. We should mention at the outset our sponsor, Science and Sport, are sponsoring the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, a nightly show, which is what you're listening to now, and 9 episodes of Kilometer Zero starting on Monday. Looking forward to all of that. So today, we're still in Holland. Fantastic crowds once again. Feels like a Sunday, but it's a Saturday. Stage 2, won by Marcel Kittel in really convincing fashion. So he's shown already this year that he's put last year behind him and his difficulties. He missed most of the season with undefined illness and other problems. But he's come back this year at Etix Quickstep looking like his old self. This, though, winning a stage on a Grand Tour is confirmation of that, isn't it? And he didn't just win the stage. He did it pretty much on his own with a very inexperienced train that did their best for him. And we'll hear from Bob Jungels, who is a member of that train, later on. But he won it by several lengths, didn't he?
He did, and I think the story really would have been if Marcel Kittel had been beaten. That would have been a story. Everyone was expecting Kittel to win, although there are some handy sprinters here. Arno Demar, Caleb Ewan, to mention a couple, Sascha Modolo.
André Greipel,
yeah.
Viviani.
Strong sprinters, but Kittel is head and shoulder. Hang on, he is Alpecin ahead of the rest.
He doesn't ride for Alpecin anymore.
I know, he's the little big man, the little giant.
Head and cheekbones above everyone else. What a remarkable array of cheekbones there was in the press conferences this evening. We had Dumoulin and then Kittel.
Marcel Kittel, and Daniel, isn't
the man himself, yeah.
No, yeah, but both owners of, between them, four wonderful cheekbones.
We watched the denouement of the stage outside, I think, the Lotto Soudal bus. They've got a television embedded in the side of their bus, and just near us were some of the staff from Française des Jeux, or FDJ as they officially are. Marshall Guyon was one of the... He's a sports director, or coach, Daniel. And they were getting very excited at the prospect of Demare winning the stage. Obviously, the Milan-San Remo winner earlier this season. And I think Française des Jeux, they did a pretty good job of the lead out, didn't they? They were getting very excited about it.
They did. I mean, I think one of the interesting aspects of the sprints here is the inexperience, not of the sprinters, as you said, some very good sprinters here, but there's some very inexperienced lead out trains. Marc Sarreau was in there for FDJ, Olivier Legac, and for Etix themselves. You know, we talked about, well, Rich said Kittel almost did it on his own. I actually thought they did a pretty damn good job, and it's been a bit of a theme since Kittel signed for Etix Quickstep. He didn't bring any riders with him from Giant Alpecin. Would he be able to contrive some kind of lead out train in the early months of this season? And well, he showed today that that train is sort of taking shape, or the B train even is taking shape. And we're going to hear from Patrick Lefebvre, the Etix Quickstep manager, later in the episode about, you know, perhaps it's not a team that has huge horsepower. It's not a train that has huge horsepower. They can't take it on with 3-4 kilometres to go from the finish. But they did a great job today.
Well, shall we hear from one member of the lead-out train, the Luxembourgeois, Bob Jungels, who couldn't find his team bus after the finish, which was the case for a lot of riders. I jogged alongside him, so if I sound a little bit out of breath, that's why. And he was pedalling and reflecting on his role in helping Marcel Kittel in what was only his second time in a lead-out train.
Yeah, for me it's one of the first times, I have to be honest, that I do lead out, and it always looks quite easy from the TV, but it's scary. Yeah, I was nervous since yesterday when they told me that I had that I'm in the lead-out train.
Well, you've got a very good record, a 100% record.
Two lead-outs until now, and two wins with him. So one in Romandy, one here.
Yeah.
Let's hope it continues like this.
Were you, it seemed quite a straightforward win for him. You know, he seemed to be much quicker than anybody else. Were you surprised by that?
To be honest, I was surprised by his performance yesterday, which was, like really impressive. And so I think everybody knows he's really fast in the sprint.
And how about you? How are your legs?
I think I was there in the final. I was pulling for almost 1K, so I can say that they're not too bad.
So we heard there from Bob Jungels.
Jungels actually did a very good job, didn't he? And, you know, as we just said, there were question marks over the Etix Quickstep train. Sabatini himself, Fabio Sabatini, he's one of the more experienced members, but brought onto that team by Mark Cavendish when Cavendish was their main sprinter, didn't really excel as Cavendish's lead-out man or as part of Cavendish's lead-out train. But you know, with lead-out trains, it is horses for courses, really, and Kittel probably needs a different kind of lead-out man, or he has different demands from Cavendish. And certainly based on today's sprint, he doesn't need a huge amount of help in the last 500 metres, certainly.
In that way, it really favoured them because the course was quite technical. They were often racing on only one side of the road. They had to come across that bridge where they were into not a stiff headwind, but enough of a headwind to make it hard for other teams to come by and assume control of the peloton. And so because it was technical, there was really only room for one or maybe two teams to get themselves into, you know, really rigid order, and that kind of neutralized some of the random factors. And I think that's why we saw that when the moment came, it was Kittel versus Demare, and there wasn't a kind of headlong rush from any of the other sprinters.
Shall we hear from somebody I always love hearing from?
Patrick Lefebvre.
I think we should.
It's an impression.
So I spoke to Patrick Lefebvre very shortly after the finish. He was hanging around outside the Etix Quickstep bus, looking very happy indeed, really sort of licking his lips over what's turning out to be an extremely good signing, isn't it? About 1.5 million euros, I think they paid for Kittel. So they got him at a fairly decent price after the travails of last year. So here's Lefebvre after the finish today in Nijmegen. Pretty much perfect, wasn't it?
Yes, we were a little bit afraid because the wind was coming from left side. They were a little bit close, but Sabatini did an intelligent move to go from far away and then forced the Française des Jeux boys to start the sprint. And Marcel, I think there's no discussion about how strong he is.
And these late, powerful lead-outs, you don't need to be on the front with 3-4 kilometres to go anymore, do you? 1.5 kilometres is enough.
No, I don't think we actually has the team to do it. We have good boys, but if really in the Tour de France you put Tony Martin with it, Eric Chiesa, and Sabatini, that's maybe another story. But everything has to be calculated so good. You have no right to mistake. This time, maybe he takes 1 second in the sprint.
And there were some doubts when Marcel came to the team about his health and everything that happened last year. But how impressed have you been with Marcel since the start of the season?
The doubts were maybe on your side, not on mine anyway. Because otherwise, I should not have taken him. Because I so long in this business, and I think somebody of 27 cannot be finished. He's a healthy boy. Everything went wrong last year, became ill, didn't have the time to recover. Then you go in a point where you only feel the shit and not the good things. And fortunately for us, he wanted to change team, and it was quite peaceful. And I was the lucky.
And pink jersey tomorrow?
We hope. It's one of the goals, but of course there's still some other guys in the bench.
So that was Patrick Lefebvre, and I gather you had a conversation with him this morning at the start as well, Lionel.
I did indeed. Should we hear what he said?
All my contracts, riders, staff, sponsors are ending end of 17. And then we will see if I'm able to restart again with everything, or I go to be retired.
Surely not. You can't suggest that you might be retiring at the end of 17.
Why not? I'm 63 then. I have also right on my personal life.
Of course, but this is your passion. I mean, your passion is not waning.
I have other passions as well.
I always feel with Patrick Lefebvre that, you know, he sees the relationship with the media as very much what he can get out of the transaction. He very often uses it to get his propaganda out there and make his point known. But I was surprised to hear him putting a sort of time limit on his involvement. He was suggesting he will retire at the end of 2017. He says, yeah, well, he's 63, he's done enough.
He has talked before about replacing himself, in effect, and looking for someone to take over the reins. And I think he felt at one time that Rolf Aldag might be the man. Aldag is now at Dimension Data. Aldag didn't particularly want to do it. And you know, they will take on a great legacy, won't they? It's a great roster at the moment, financially very powerful. Talk of Peter Sagan going there next year. But he's a tough act to follow, as you say, Lionel, in terms of charisma and as a figurehead. And in terms of, obviously, his status in Belgian cycling.
It's got to be Wilfried Peters, is it not? He's got to be the favourite to replace Lefebvre as the main man.
That's very much David Moyes following Sir Alex Ferguson, isn't it? To use a footballing analogy, I don't think Peters is really. I mean, he can't run. He
really
can't run a bath,
there.
Can he? Let's be honest.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Yes, thank you again to Science and Sport. And a reminder that all podcast listeners can get 20% off all their purchases from Science and Sport. Go to the website, www.scienceinsport.com, and enter the code SIS20, that's SIS20, and you'll get 20% off. That's pretty good, isn't it? 20% off. I wonder if we should invest in some gels and so on to get us around Italy. What do you reckon, Lionel?
Certainly. I rode a cycliste sportive in France at the Trobriand-Lyon a few weeks ago. Blew spectacularly.
You could have
really
done.
Rude not taking more energy gels with me. We had them all in the boot of Simon's van, and we just complacently thought, oh, we'll be fine. Blew up badly.
There you go. There's a great advert for the Science and Sport products, Lionel, the state of Lionel. And we probably have, you were with Simon the photographer, so we've probably got photographic evidence that the Science and Sport want to use any of those pictures to help shift some product. I'm sure we can oblige. We're going to call this section the retirement section, aren't we? Because we're going to come back to talking about today's stage and the implications, particularly on the overall standings of the time trial as well. We're going to sort of carry on with that in part three, but let's do a bit of retirement stuff, because Daniel had an interesting encounter with a recently retired rider at the start, but there were a couple of other sort of notes on retirement. Fabian Cancellara, in his final season, his final Giro, he's having a tough old time of it. It's funny, isn't it, because start of the season around March time, February, March, you know, Mallorca and then Strada Bianchi, we were thinking Cancellara is going to go out in a blaze of glory. This is Eno-esque, you know, he'd got it just right. He was in fantastic form, but since then it's all gone wrong for him.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things, isn't it? How fragile a professional cyclist's season can be. An illness at the wrong time, and Cancellara came down with what he's called stomach flu, so basically diarrhea and all those
all right,
kind of
Lionel,
other nasty
we don't need
things.
The details.
Well, yeah, that's what the podcast's for, isn't it? The details.
Family
we're not
show.
Television.
It's
we're
a
not,
family show.
We're not showing anything unpleasant. But 2 days before the Giro, he's unwell. His big objective, the time trial. And today he was really swinging, wasn't he, Daniel?
Yeah, he was, and you know he'll want to certainly get well for when we go back to Catanzaro, which is where his family or half of his family is from, that region of Italy, Basilicata. So, and you know the stage to Praia Mare, we talked about it yesterday. There's a nasty climb in the finale. It is the kind of stage that he might have targeted in other circumstances. However, as you said, he has been very ill on Thursday. So the night before the prologue, he was up at 2 a.m. calling the team doctor. 37.8 degree temperature he had. He's got a fever. Is that high? I don't really. Is that very high? Extremely high?
I think it's
never mind that.
I'll
tell you what.
High,
I mean, yeah. if he is suffering from diarrhea, as Lionel alleges, you wouldn't want to hashtag follow Fabian, would you? to plug the Eurosport series.
Richard. He came in very gingerly today in Nijmegen. There was some consternation in the Trek Segafredo camp, not sure whether he'll be able to continue. Well, they certainly hope he'll be able to continue. I spoke to Dirk de Mol, his direct sportif, about just what an unpleasant day it'd been for Fabian and anyone within sniffing distance of Fabian. So here's Dirk de Mol of Trek Segafredo speaking to me at the finish this evening. Your captain, Fabian Cancellara, seemed to be having a pretty tough day out there today.
Yeah, sure. You know, there are no miracles, and I know how sick he was, especially on Wednesday. And Thursday he was a little better, but he didn't come out all day except for the team presentations. And yeah, yesterday in the prologue was a huge effort, and the body was still not recovered, and you go again super deep. And it's not the best thing, but anyway, he survived well today. I could not speak to him after the finish, but he survived well today, and that's also the hope tomorrow. Then we have a day off and moving to Italy. And normally when he had diarrhea and fever, the first 2-3 days are the worst that you are without power. But I think it's Fabian, it's a strong person, it's a strong rider, strong athlete. And we still hope that he recover.
Was there any question of him abandoning today? Did he mention that?
No. It was not a question. Before the race, also for him was just like, okay, try to survive, try to go through the day, and we're going to try to do exactly the same tomorrow.
And presumably, you're hoping he'll have recovered in time for the second time trial, maybe in Chianti, would be a good target.
Yeah. So maybe it's still 1 week to go. Till we are there, so let's hope. We have to have a look on it day by day, but like I said, if he can survive the stages here in Holland, then we have a day off, and then we'll see. We hope that he can survive.
So that was Dirk de Mol. If you want a good diarrhea story, of course, I can recommend Slaying the Badger, a book about the 1986 Tour de France. But anyway, enough about that. What else are we going to talk about in our retirement section?
Well, Fabian Cancellara is soon to be retired. Michael Rogers, the Australian rider with Tinkoff, he is retired, very recently so. Daniel, you bumped into him yesterday morning, I think.
Just trying to think, did Mick Rogers ever ride in the same team as Fabian Cancellara? He's been around the block about
time. They were in the Mapai development team, weren't they?
How could I forget? Mick Rogers was at the Tinkoff bus yesterday. He's obviously recently retired due to health problems, due to a long-standing heart problem which has recently got worse and has forced him to retire. So I spotted him yesterday and had a quick word about that problem itself and how it's developed and got worse over the years, and also just about his plans for the coming months and years. Well, the first few weeks haven't taken a toll on your waistline. You look as though you're keeping fit, but can you give those who don't know a potted history of the health problem that ultimately has caused you to retire, and you know how your emotions sort of evolved as you found out that it was more serious than you first thought?
Well, back in 2001, my first year as professional in our annual health screening, they picked up on a congenital problem in my heart. It's basically the aortic valve. Instead of opening in three leaflets, only opens in two, so I can put it into layman's terms. If you can imagine a valve opening and the Mercedes-Benz logo, so it's like a star and it opens and closes in three leaflets. I was born with two. Creates an imperfect sealing of the valve, so there is some regurgitation of blood flows back into the left side of the heart. In turn, the heart picks up on this accumulation of extra blood in the left ventricle and does an irregular beat to pump it back out. So every 6 months I've been required for the last 16 years to have control. The amount of those extra irregular beats was considered very low, but over time, every year, that's slowly increased to a point now where it's becoming, you know, a bit risky.
So it didn't come as a complete shock when you got the bad news that it'd become more serious and it might actually restrict you?
It's been restricting me for some time. I've had to really just suck it up, so to say, and there's nothing I could do about it. It was just a matter of keeping it under control, and we always have.
You talked about how much you've got from riding for Alberto Contador, helping him, etc. It looks as though now he's going to carry on for at least one more year, possibly two. Presumably, you think he's still got a lot to give.
Out of all the stage race riders that I rode alongside with, I think Alberto's the most talented. His recovery capacity is amazing. I really have never seen anyone like it before. But saying that, a lot of guys have lifted their game in these last couple of years. When Alberto attacks now, there'll probably be six or seven guys following. And he finds himself having to reinvent himself and find a new stimulus to keep winning. I take my hat off that he can do another, he wants to do another 1 or 2 years or whatever he's decided to do, because there's been a lot of riders that have come and gone since he's been at the top. And when he's on a good year, he wins the Tour de France. When he's on a bad year, he finishes fourth, he finishes fifth. And a champion like that comes along every 10-15 years, and he's done lots of the sport.
So that was Mick Rogers. He not being specific about his future plans really, but I can definitely see him resurfacing as a direct sportif somewhere, team manager. Of course, he was the road captain for Bradley Wiggins when Wiggins won the Tour de France. Interesting to hear him also singing the praises of Alberto Contador and really implying that Contador had been the most gratifying captain to work for.
Did you not see him, Daniel, also briefing or giving a rider a pep talk before the time trial?
He did. Pavel Brut was having some problems yesterday with his computer or some of his equipment. And Rogers, who is not really here in an official capacity, strolled over and he said, "Pavel, we need you to concentrate on the race right now. Don't worry about whatever it is, the problem that you've got. So just focus and let's get this time trial out of the way."
I once asked somebody at Team Sky in a senior position who was the best ever signing for Team Sky, and they said Mick Rogers. And they said that without Mick Rogers, Bradley Wiggins wouldn't have won the 2012 Tour de France. When you speak to people at Sky, they always mention there's always somebody who, without whom, Bradley Wiggins wouldn't have won the Tour de France. I'm starting to wonder if Bradley Wiggins did win the Tour de France.
Well, especially Bradley Wiggins. Without Bradley Wiggins,
that's
Bradley
true.
Wiggins
no, that's
wouldn't
fair
have won
point.
The Tour de France.
Yeah, without Bradley Wiggins would not have won the Tour de France. Final little bit of the retirement section. I bumped into a furious Ned Bolting at the finish today. He was just wanting to let off a bit of steam about his co-commentator on the world feed, Dan Lloyd. He had researched a fact about Martin Cilinghi, who's racing his final season and not riding too many races. He was in the break today. Yeah, anyway, here's what Ned had to say.
Right, you want a fact? I'll give you a fact, right? I researched this and worked it out for myself. Martin Cilinghi, over the last three editions of Milan-San Remo, has spent 800 kilometres plus in a breakaway. Right, I researched that fact, was commentating for the world feed today. Within minutes, Dan Lloyd had just said it to a worldwide audience and just nicked it from me and kind of claimed it as his own. He's that kind of guy.
So that was a furious Ned Bolting there.
I feel a bit sorry for Ned there. You know, he's but that's how a team works, isn't it?
It's journalistic doping, isn't it?
Well, he's Dan Lloyd's lead-out man in that instance, isn't he? He's done all of the research, all of the hard yards.
Unwitting lead-out man. He didn't realise he was going to be his lead-out man.
True, but, I mean, sometimes someone's got a bigger hammer than you, haven't they? And that's just the way it is. Anyway, Martin Cialinghi...
He needs a captain's armband like me.
Offer him the captain's armband tomorrow. Martin Cialinghi of Lotto Jumbo... rider we're going to be hearing a bit more about later in the week on the podcast, hopefully. We're working on something at the moment. But, yeah, probably not a surprise that he was off the front because he lives in or around Arnhem, which is where the stage started today. He is one of those riders who does attack, gets up the road. He's done it in the classics before. He did it when he rode for Skill Shimano particularly, and he really was, for a while, the sort of leading light of Skill Shimano in the classics. And the three riders out front, we should give them a bit of a big up, because it was Omar Fraile of the Dimension Data, the Italian rider, sorry, Daniel, who was in the break, the Italian rider in
Bellato.
The break. That's right. And Martin Cialinghi, thank you, coming to my rescue there in a sort of reverse of the, you know, the Dan Lloyd Ned Bolton
scenario.
Daniel's
attention there, because he's deep into Nibali's book.
I was actually wondering whether he wanted another beer, but anyway, carry on.
Well, so yeah, Cialinghi, he's the kind of the elder statesman, the road captain almost of the Lotto Jumbo team. He's retiring. He's doing a few more races after this Giro. He's going to do the National Championships and the ZLM Tour in the Netherlands. But it was a bit of a half-hearted break, because with only three of them up the road, they did get a decent advantage, but they didn't really get within spitting distance of the finish today. 20 kilometres to go, and it was more or less all over. The Italian rider did try and hold off the bunch, but the bunch didn't really even have to work terribly hard to bring them in.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Il Giro era ancora tutto da scrivere, ma intanto potevo tornare dall'Olanda con buone sensazioni addosso. The script of the Giro still had to be written, but I could come back from Holland with good feelings.
You know what? I saw Fabian Cancellara yesterday. No, hang on. I'll get back to that in a minute, Daniel. I saw Fabian Cancellara yesterday before it started, and I thought I'd never seen anybody in the zone to the extent that Cancellara was before that time trial. But Daniel, before that reading, it was unbelievable focus.
We should explain, that was our daily feature, The Shark's Tale. Every day, at least one line of Vincenzo Nibali's autobiography, Di Furore e Lealtà, telling in a certain fashion the story of Vincenzo Nibali's Giro. And there he was talking about the last time the Giro went to Holland, 2010, which of course Ivan Basso, his teammate, won. And he said that he'd gone back to Italy feeling pretty good that time. And Ciro keeps telling us that Nibali is getting better, he's feeling better every day, and he could be, well, it's all sounding very ominous, isn't it?
This is profound stuff, and it's a daily feature. There's going to be a line a day from Vincenzo Nibali. Even when you're not on the race, Daniel, you're going to send us your daily dose.
As if
of
by magic. Yeah.
Daily dose of The Shark's Tale. Thank you for that. It's wonderful. Really got the hair standing on the back of my neck.
So he certainly did, yeah. Yes, nothing more I can add, really. I mean, it's,
well,
just,
we're going to talk about the battle for pink, the fight for pink, of
hashtag
course.
Hashtag fight for pink. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we did obviously talk about that yesterday, but I think we've been continuing to digest the implications of the time trial, what it means. We mentioned last night that Rigoberto Urán might have been disappointed with his ride. I went and spoke to his director sportif, Fabrizio Guidi, a former rider who's a DS at Cannondale, and asked him whether, you know, he was a little bit disappointed with Urán's ride. He said, no, absolutely not. His power was exactly where they want it to be, and they feel that his form's coming, considering the racing and the training that he's done over the last month or two. That was exactly the sort of performance they expected from him. They feel very confident. They feel that he's got a strong team here to support him, and they were pretty happy.
Paolo Bettini, the former two-time world champion, is in a column in La Gazzetta dello Sport, Ciro's paper, and he said that Landa lost way too much time yesterday and that it boded very, very poorly for the remaining two time trials.
That's interesting, because Dave Brailsford seemed pretty comfortable with how Landa rode. He was saying that's exactly where they thought he would be, that's exactly where they wanted him to be. What is it, 43 seconds?
He would say that, wouldn't he?
Of course he would say that, but he, following up what you said, Daniel, yesterday about how those flat time trial efforts do favour riders with zingy, springy legs. It doesn't really favour the real sort of the climbers who are, let's face it, are looking to be coming on strong in a couple of weeks' time. So I don't think too much to concern about. I think it's the riders who've performed better than expected that really should be very happy. I mean, we've mentioned yesterday Andre Amador, for example, but there are a few others that are high up the classification.
Amador ninth today in the bunch sprint.
Yeah, that's the definition of springy legs, isn't it?
Somebody in great form. I bumped into an official today from the Giro who said Amador. He said Amador's going to win the Giro.
From the Giro?
It was Matt Rendell.
Oh, I was going to say.
Well,
Tom knows Amador very well, of course.
He does, well, having worked for Movistar, now back working for the Giro. But Tom Dumoulin is the current leader. People were speculating after Marcel Kittel's very impressive time trial performance whether Kittel would get the time bonus seconds at the intermediate sprint or enough at the finish to take the pink jersey. He hasn't done that today, of course. Yeah, there was a bit of banter going back and forth between Marcel Kittel and...
Bantz.
Hashtag Bantz, between Marcel Kittel and his former Giant Alpecin teammates. The Giant Alpecin teammates were saying, please don't win the bonus seconds at the intermediate sprint. The break was already up the road. That was the Giant Alpecin plan, was to make sure the break went up the road and ensure that Kittel wouldn't be able to get the pink jersey today. There was a couple of questions asking whether Kittel's gap in the finishing sprint was big enough to warrant a 1 second time gap, which would have given him the pink jersey. Neither Dumoulin nor Marcel Kittel thought there was any real case for that, and I think it would have been pretty harsh considering Demar, although, you know, length back, there wasn't any time between Kittel as a stage winner and Demar in second place.
Kittel, who of course has never made it to Italy in the Giro, has he? And he's never won a professional race in Italy. He's won time trials as an amateur in Italy, but never won a pro race in Italy.
An extraordinary fact, that, really. Three stage wins in the Giro d'Italia, one in Belfast, one in Dublin, now one here in Nijmegen. And he's not yet ridden a Giro stage in its home country. Presumably, he's going to make it to Italy, isn't he? He's going to get on the plane? I mean,
Kittel?
Yeah, or is he going to win again?
I think that's the plan at this stage. I haven't heard any word to the contrary. I mean, in Ireland, of course, it was terrible weather. So you don't know if that... But he fell ill very, very suddenly, didn't he? I mean, he seemed absolutely fine. He obviously won two stages. And I remember the press conference, he seemed absolutely fine. And it was a real surprise to find out that he fell ill overnight. But the weather there was a contributing factor, I think. And the weather here has been fantastic.
And it would be quite interesting to see if Kittel does take the jersey. You know, presumably Dumoulin will be quite happy with that, and you know, his team is very inexperienced as well, Giant Alpecin, and you know, just how he goes about things over the next week or so or 10 days. There's some speculation, you know, as we said yesterday, people were perhaps getting a bit carried away, the Dutch journalists, the Dutch fans, talking about, well, will he now change his objectives, change his goals and start thinking about GC? He's been quite adamant that he won't challenge for the pink jersey over the 3 weeks. But, you know, opinion is divided on that. And it might be that he just decides to test himself.
I think given the start to the year that Giant Alpecin had, you know, the victory for Dumoulin is already a huge weight off the shoulders for the whole team. He was asked about that, whether the pressure was ramping up because they hadn't won a World Tour race. Richard just ordering a beer there. It was extraordinarily off.
Oh, they are coming. I was a bit premature there. Sorry about that.
Our beers are arriving. Sorry, I was just saying that getting that win for Giant Alpecin, their first win of the season, although the pressure wasn't on Dumoulin or the riders to get that first win, it's a huge relief for them. He made the comment in the press conference that although he hadn't received an email from the team saying, come on, it's time to start winning, he felt a personal pressure to get his season off to a good start. We must just point out, Dumoulin wasn't directly affected by that crash in Calpe in January. He wasn't in the group that was hit by the motorist, or indeed in the group that passed the accident. I think he was in the group that preceded it and was back at the hotel when he heard. But it's obviously sent shockwaves through the whole team.
Well, I was there and I was there to interview him, actually, and he didn't want to do the interview. He was so shaken, which is completely understandable. The whole team was shaken. And I saw him the next day, and they all looked still traumatized, really, by what happened. So the effect on the team was profound.
And I think they are seeing this as a stepping stone, and they're very good, Giant Alpecin, at taking a long-term view, which is very rare in professional cycling with, you know, sponsors contracts only tending to last 2 years, 3 years, world tour licenses as well. Teams not really planning beyond a couple of seasons generally, but Giant Alpecin have always taken this long-term view. And you know, we heard yesterday Speckenbrink, their manager, talking about how this Giro is part of a 2 or 3 year plan, and Mark Reef, the coach, said the same. And you know, they felt that last year he made big strides on the climbs, and it was new for him to be able to compete really on stages where there was more than one climb. However, you look at the last week of the Giro, you know, I think this race goes above 2,000 meters 10 times, which is almost a record, I think, in Grand Tour history. And you know, you look at the one stage in the Dolomites, or the one road stage in the Dolomites, where the Dolomite police will be able to take a day off. And that, I think there are 5 2,000 meter plus climbs that day. And you look at stages like that and you think, yeah, perhaps Dumoulin is smart not to be advertising his ambitions, you know, for general classification.
A lot of talk about Dumoulin's build, you know, during the Vuelta last year when he did put up such a great fight for the overall against specialist climbers like Fabio Aru. Just watching him at the finish, in the finish area, beside Marcel Kittel. You know, Kittel's obviously a big beefcake. And watching Dumoulin beside him, you could see that actually he's quite slight. You know, he's got broad shoulders, but he's got very, very spindly legs, skinny legs. And he's not that heavy. He's not as heavy as I think he looks. And so, you know, he's not somebody for whom climbing comes naturally. But, you know, there's no reason why he cannot develop into a GC rider, I think.
I think another level on which this will be a test for him will be how he copes with the pressure, really, if he does find himself close to the pink jersey. I mean, Mark Reef told me in San Remo in March that they didn't publicise this at the time. They have spoken about it very little since, but at the Vuelta, when he lost the jersey on the penultimate day, he was actually falling ill, and they thought at the time that was probably due to stress and pressure, and he wasn't comfortable in that situation. So they will look for signs that he is making progress also on that level at this Giro.
Just on how it affects the Giro to have Tom Dumoulin in the pink jersey, Marcel Kittel the stage winner, and I think in the points jersey, in terms of the sort of the image of the race, the outward projection of the race, you couldn't really have two finer poster boys for the opening weekend, could you? I mean, they're both handsome lads. Tom Dumoulin, they're both very charismatic in the press conferences. They express themselves very well in their, you know, in a language that isn't their first language. Tom Dumoulin's clearly popular on the roadside. He was talking about the crowds today. He said that that carried him along, as it often does, where, particularly for a race leader. But he did point out that he saw a flag or a banner or a sign which said, "Marry me, Tom." And he made a joke that he wouldn't be taking up the presumably young lady on that particular offer, because he would, he said his girlfriend would be the one expecting him to be making that offer at some point.
No, you're right about Kittel and Dumoulin being great poster boys, and I think I was saying to somebody that if it has felt these couple of days in Holland bigger and in lots of ways better than the Grand Départ of the Tour in Holland last year. I don't know why that is. Obviously, Dumoulin winning was, the script was perfect. And it's just, I don't know, there's been a national holiday as well. This is a student town. At the finish, there were a lot of young people out enjoying themselves, and I spoke to a few of them, and there were lots of balconies that were filled with people, and even temporary structures set up for little stands and so on. It was really a great carnival music festival type atmosphere.
And I think that really brings home the kind of pressure that Tom Dumoulin will face if he does emerge as a Grand Tour contender in Holland. Holland, you know, they haven't had a Tour de France winner since 1980. The expectation is already huge, and the popularity of cycling is already huge, but it would grow and it would swell And that would be quite a daunting undertaking for the next man in, the next man in line. And it's looking increasingly as though it will be Dumoulin after, you know, many false hopes over the years, most of them from the Rabobank system, Heysink, Kelderman, and they've all fallen by the wayside. And we've had this rider, Tom Dumoulin, who's gone into a different system and seems to be thriving. And, you know, who knows? He could be Zoetemelk's successor.
Let's wrap things up, shall we, there, chaps? We've gone on long enough. We're still in Holland tomorrow.
Really, you should have the whistle, shouldn't you?
I should have the whistle. I'm going to have the whistle tomorrow night. Just a quick word, we did mention the Eurosport, our other sponsor, and we will be launching our Pedlar de Charme Daily Award. We've got T-shirts to give to riders. Please start your nominations tomorrow. We might even start it tomorrow. If you spot some particularly charming pedaling or any other gesture or action that you think merits the award of Pedlar de Charme, it's a very loose category. It can be anything at all. Do tweet or Facebook your nominations. Just hashtag PDC Giro. Hashtag PDC Giro. And we will start considering those tomorrow and start awarding the T-shirt. Let's wrap up. There's only one thing left for tonight's show, and that's for you guys to sing happy birthday, to play us out. Off you go.
English or Italian?
Oh, you can do Italian, Daniel, again.
I've already done it in Italian, haven't I?
It's okay. Better, isn't it?
Tanti auguri a te. Tanti auguri a te.
Lionel, I can't hear you.
I don't know the words.
Good night. Happy birthday, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. Many happy returns.